This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
If you're a fellow marketer, PR executive, or in the communications line, this one's for you. Our guest today has been named this year as one of the 50 most influential people in PR by PR Week. She's Irish and a mother of four and started her career in PR in a startup agency and has worked tirelessly for the last 20 years. And today?
My name is Amer Hines and I'm the CEO of Text 100.
You're listening to The Enterprise and I'm Angeline Tay. We managed to catch Amer when she was in town to celebrate Text 100 Malaysia's 10th year anniversary. The CEO shares how she jumped the ranks to be part of the board of director and eventually leading the group.
Let's just start from the beginning. You graduated from the National University of Galway. I read that, you know, according to Irish Times, that you would be destined for, you know, performing arts or the theatre. How did you get into PR in the first place?
That's an interesting story because when I finished my degree, I was actually supposed to do a postgraduate diploma in education because that was what path I was thinking of following, and my application was late. So I had to decide to do another course, and I chose marketing. And from marketing then, I had this idea that to be effective in marketing, I should probably work in all of the different disciplines. And when I moved to London, I decided to do PR first. And the first agency that I joined was Text 100. And it was a little startup agency specializing technology. And I loved it. And it was all about growth. And it was growth working with some of the greatest innovators and disruptors. And the agency was building its profile across mainland Europe. So I got a chance to be part of that. So building offices in different markets and really getting to work with clients to communicate their message across different cultures started to become really interesting for me. So I stayed with Text 100 and had the opportunity to grow with the company.
And until today, there's about 500 staff.
Actually, we're more than 600.
More than 600 today, and more than 30 offices worldwide?
Today, we're 24 wholly owned offices, and then we have affiliates in the markets that we're not currently present in.
Okay. And I'm just looking through your LinkedIn profile, right? So you graduated in 1986. By then, January 1990, you were board of director for the UK office for Text 100. That's just 4 years after graduation. I mean, all of us, most of our young executives, 4 years, it's not a you know, jump start for you to be a board of director. How did you manage to just shoot up?
Well, actually, I'm not sure those dates are correct. Maybe I'm not sure if the profile is correct, but basically I joined Text 100 in 1990.
Okay.
So I had a job in Ireland before I moved to London, and it was a marketing job. And so when I joined Text 100 in 1990, I spent the first number of years working with clients and moving my way through the organization. So I think that I joined the board of directors in 1997, I would say. So yes, 7 years was a short time, but I think it was also reflective of the company was very, very small at the time. And so I think the thing that helped me most is that the client work I was doing gave me exposure to working with very different kind of companies. I got a lot of broad experience. The company was in a growth mode, and I think it gave me the opportunity to accelerate my career faster than I think most people do, just simply because of the hyper growth that we were experiencing as a company.
And then you moved to North America after?
Yeah, I did. I had the opportunity. One of the clients I was working for, Xerox, was having some challenges in the U.S. with its subsidiary, which was the Xerox PARC, which is the Palo Alto Research Center, which is a lot of where the innovation and R&D is done on behalf of Xerox. So they had some particular challenges about reputation, because if you know the story about PARC, it was where the graphical user interface was first invented, and the mouse and some of the technologies that we use in our everyday life. It was all invented in PARC, but it was technology that was brought to market by companies like Apple and Microsoft. So people perceived that Park had managed to fumble the future. And so they wanted somebody to help them with that, telling the story correctly. And so they asked, would I be willing to move to the US to support them in that effort, which of course I agreed to do, which gave Text 100 the opportunity to set up a base in the US market. So I moved with two children to Silicon Valley from London, and I set up the first Text 100 office there.
I know that you're a strong believer of innovation, but then in today's world, the word innovation has been used so many times, I don't know what it means anymore. And specifically the story about Xerox PARC. Tell us about how this experience with the PARC has helped you in working with the PR strategies today.
It has helped me in more ways than you could possibly imagine. And I don't think I truly understood that at the time. But when I reflect back on the fundamental notion of innovation and creativity, what PARC focused on was this notion that we all come from different backgrounds and different perspectives. And those different backgrounds and perspectives give us an opportunity to see the world differently. So their approach to innovation was to bring people together to talk about a specific problem or challenge, but to go to the root of the problem, strip it back, then assemble and reassemble the solution. But the way they did that, which is the piece that has influenced me most, is that they brought together very, very different people. So they would bring a scientist, a mathematician, an anthropologist, people with very, very different ways of looking at the world. But they'd also do things like bring a musician, a mother, a kid. And so all of these people have a different perspective. So therefore, by working together as a team, they actually will create a better solution collectively than any one person would do alone. So the way that's influenced my thinking is how I run Text 100. We bring different groups of people together with different experiences, and they together form a fantastic team. I move people from one office to from an office here in Malaysia may have the opportunity to go work in New York. Somebody from San Francisco can go work in London. So that they are continually fueling this notion that different cultures, different backgrounds, different perspectives make for a richer team experience.
And tell us about your work at the Xerox PARC. I think that's when your career in America started, right? What was Xerox facing in the 90s? You were saying that they were fighting with Japanese competition back then. Mm-hmm. So what did you do to change the reputation of Xerox?
So we really took a very strategic view of communication. So rather, one of the things that was very obvious is that there was no shortage of media attention for Xerox PARC. Every media outlet wanted to cover what was going on in Xerox PARC. But Xerox PARC was not in control of the story. So the first thing we did was to stop the media and stop the conversations until we figured out what do we want to tell the world, as opposed to just simply allowing the media to determine what story they wanted. And so really the story we wanted to tell was that the innovation that was happening in PARC was being commercialized by Xerox, but it was also being spun out into other companies, independent companies that reported into Xerox. So the commercialization of innovation was one of our key messages. But in the same way, we also wanted to talk about what Xerox was doing as the corporation and how successful it was being. So ultimately, we came up with a strategy, which was how does Xerox business acumen influence innovation to be commercial? And how does innovation influence Xerox Corporation to be more innovative? So it was always this trade-off between these two things. So it was a strategy that was based on that. One of the ways that we executed that was whenever the CEO spoke, we would have the chief scientist with him. Whenever the chief scientist spoke, we would have the CEO with him. So we were always juxtaposing this notion of innovation and business and innovation. And as a result of that, people began to see PARC in a whole new way. And so we were recasting or retelling a story that people thought they knew in a new way.
We'll talk about different campaigns and how she built a career within Text 100 while balancing her time with her family. And here's a warning before you listen on, she doesn't like the word balance. So don't go anywhere. This is Enterprise with Amar Hines, CEO of Text 100, BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Hello, you're listening to Enterprise, and we have the CEO of Text 100 with us on the show today. She joined Text 100 when it was just a startup, and today the agency has expanded into 25 markets. She started in London, then moved to the Silicon Valley for the Xerox PARC project. And what happened after?
First of all, my first thing was once we had established a presence in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco, we had the opportunity to work with other clients. I was building the business, so we opened 4 offices in America, San Francisco, New York, Rochester, New York, to support Xerox Corporate, and then an office in Boston. So we built that presence, and at the same time, one of my colleagues was building out our presence in Asia, hence Malaysia being part of that. And so we got to a point where we had a global operation with 24 offices, and I was asked by my boss, who was the CEO, would I consider taking on the overall running of the business? That was in about 2002. And so I thought that was a very exciting opportunity, so I became CEO of the company, and we had the opportunity then after that to pitch IBM worldwide. And that was probably another big catalyst of change for us, was to be able to work with a company of the size and significance and importance of IBM, but not just represent them in one market in the US, but actually help them to tell a consistent global story in every single market across the world, which probably to me was one of the most exciting aspects of my career, was to help and support them do that.
How did you feel when you were talking to the CEO back then that you were appointed as the next CEO? How did you feel at that moment?
A little bit in dread, because I think, one of the things that for most women that move through the ranks of an organization, you're always trying to balance that notion of ambition and excitement about the job, for sure, but also, will this take time away from my children and from my family? Because now my travel, which had been extensive in North America, was going to involve traveling across the world, which means chunks of time away from my kids. And so that's what really went through my mind. My biggest priority was, will this impact my children and how will they feel about it?
And how did you manage then, now that you are the CEO, managing, overseeing 24 offices, over 600 staff, how do you balance the work and also with 4 kids?
Yeah, so one of the things that I feel strongly about is that I don't think it's actually about balance. I like to use the word blending. And the reason I do that is because the notion of balance can really get us incredibly upset, because I feel that at times there are times when my life is out of balance. Actually, my life is out of balance all the time. Sometimes I'm prioritizing my children and my family, so they're the most important thing. And other times I'm prioritizing my work. So for me, the approach I took over the years was, how about I blend these two things together? So by blending, I mean, how do I make sure that my children are involved and understand about my work? And how do I, make my work and my clients know more about my family and my priorities there? So rather than keeping the two very separate, I did everything I could possibly do to bring the two things together.
So you were saying first office in the US and then you open up to more offices in the States. It's kind of the other way around. You know that US multinationals, from US, they open in Europe and then in Asia Pacific. Mm-hmm. But then Text 100 is a European company mm-hmm. entering US, and now it's one of the world's largest agencies.
Yeah.
So was someone visionary, back then, trying to be a global communications agency? What was that thought behind the expansion?
I don't think it was necessarily visionary. I think we were ambitious about what we wanted to do. And I feel like our clients, in many respects, were part of the story too, because many of our clients felt that what we did in one market was very good. And if we could help them in other markets, that would be great. So the story about my moving to North America to help Xerox was an example of that. I was working with them in Europe, and they were saying, if we could have some of what Text 100 does in Europe, in America, we'd be very happy. And so the journey that we took was less about us having a destination and more of a journey of growth alongside our clients. For example, one of the early stories of why we went into South Africa was that we were working with Microsoft, and they were setting up an operation, and that we were a trusted partner of theirs, and they were considering how do they deal with apartheid in South Africa, and they said we needed a trusted partner to help us navigate politically an environment that we're uncertain about. And so we set up an office in South Africa at the same time that they were moving in order to support them. And so many of our offices were actually set up because a client asked us to set up in that market in order to support them.
How do you then motivate your staff?
Well, there's lots of different ways to motivate our staff. And so I think probably the biggest opportunity is to get to work on exciting challenges, right? So for us, it's very important as we decide which clients we want to work with, we actually consider the point of view of our employees. Would employees be excited about this client? Do they feel that that company aligns with their own values? Will this be something that will attract more talent to join our organization because of the kind of clients we work with? So the work itself has got to be fulfilling. It's got to align with people's values, and it's got to be something that they get excited about doing. So that's at a very basic level. Who are the clients we work with, and will they provide a great opportunity for our people? But then in addition to that, our culture is all about collaboration. You know, back to the Xerox PARC thing. All about collaboration of people working across teams. And so the more opportunities that we have to allow people to work in multiple markets, for example, that's quite motivating for people. They think, oh, with Tax 100, not only will I get to work in Malaysia, but I'll have the opportunity to go work in other markets if I want to do that. And then there are all sorts of things like the kind of benefits that we offer our people. I think anybody can offer a high salary, but if you're a mom and you want to be able to have more children and you want to still grow your career, then we make sure that we put the right support in place for you to take the right amount of time on maternity leave to be able to come back to work perhaps on a 3-day week as opposed to a 5-day week, you know, allow you the time necessary to work away from the office if that's what you need to do. So there's a lot of flexibility built in because the agency is really built to think about people's entire life, not just their life at work. So that goes back to blending. Mm-hmm. It's like we all know that the part of the person that's at work is part of a person that's part of a family and part of a much bigger sense of life that goes on outside of work. So we try as best we can to support both aspects. So to me, these are the things that were important to me when I was developing my career. And so my assumption is if I build a company that will support people doing that, that will be attractive to them too.
So now you play the role of protecting the wellness of your staff. Well, then how do you motivate yourself?
I think that is a motivation. I think that I feel incredibly lucky to have had the career I have had. I still remain very excited about that, but for my own future as well, I'm in a constant state of learning. But the thing that inspires me now is, can I provide that opportunity for a whole new generation of people who want to have the same ambitions I have, who want to have the same career opportunities? You know, why could they not move from entry-level position to become CEO one day if that's what they want to do? I want to be able to provide them with that opportunity and the support they do that. But I am also inspired by the opportunity to bring up 4 children and have them believe that there are no boundaries. I was a young Irish girl and I became a global CEO based in New York of an organization of the size I am, and therefore, why would anybody else not have that same opportunity? So I feel the same about inspiring my children to believe anything is possible. If you work hard and go after it, then you should have it.
What is your motto though? Like for, you know, whenever you're feeling challenged with some projects?
I think the biggest thing is to keep perspective, right? So in every single challenge, as long as you remain focused on what is the challenge and how do you keep perspective. You know, there is no challenge that you can't break down, no challenge so large that you can't break down into small pieces and solve each one at a time. I think sometimes the enormity of a challenge seems overwhelming. Whereas if you step back take some perspective, think about it, then actually you can tackle each part of the challenge in a sequential way, or have other people help you and gain support from people who may know more than you do. So for me, it's about keep calm, keep your perspective, and take it in bite-sized chunks. There's nothing so large that you can't actually find a way to deal with it.
We'll be back after these messages to talk more about her leadership style, advice to young executives, and the future of communications with the CEO of Text 100, Amar Hines. This is Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money, BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise, and we're joined by Amar Hines, CEO of Text 100, who climbed her way to be at the top of the group.
Do you have any advice to young executives who probably started out their careers 3 years into the career, but they felt that sense of plateau? I think in today's world, it seems harder to work for an organization for 20 years. So what would your advice be for young executives?
Well, I think to remain focused on the job at hand, do the best possible job you can. In other words, spend less time looking around you and saying, oh, this other person has a better opportunity than me, or that person is doing more than I do. You know, I think really doing the job that you do today to the very best of your own ability is the first thing. If for some reason you feel you've hit a glass ceiling or you've hit some sort of a plateau, then at that stage you need to begin to determine, is there something I can do about this? Can I change my circumstances within the organization I'm in? And if you cannot, for whatever set of reasons you cannot get past that plateau, then that's time to think about working with another organization. And even in my own company, sometimes people come to me saying, I feel like this isn't working for me anymore. I actually encourage them to think about a career somewhere else, because I don't believe that we should keep people at all costs, because it's all about the development of the individual. And if they would find a career somewhere else more rewarding or more appealing to them, then I encourage them to go and discover that. And I think that sense of thinking about the person first, it's interesting. People go, they figure out that actually what they thought they wanted somewhere else wasn't quite what they wanted. So we often have people come back, which I think is really cool. So the door is always open. I encourage people to really experience different things, but come back if you want to come back and work at Text 100.
Do you have a book that you keep close to you when you read to inspire yourself?
I don't know if I have a book per se. I know that there are people who inspire me, and I think the great mavericks in the technology industry are probably, you know, some of my heroes, and I've had the opportunity to work with many of them. So, you know, even most recently reading Walter Isaacson's book on Steve Jobs was fascinating, because as a leader, he was such a different leader and different leadership qualities than my own leadership style. So what does that say about him as an individual, and what can I learn from that? And so to me, I think the notion of leadership is personal. I think that you can be inspired by other people and you can draw references, but it has to come back to who you are as a person, and you have to be authentic in your leadership style. So that's kind of what I tend to gain from when I read about other people and their leadership styles.
Okay. How would you describe your leadership style?
Open, transparent, authentic. You know, I am who I am. I do what I say I'll do, and very collaborative. I do believe, though, over time that lots of collaboration is important, but ultimately a leader has to be decisive, and they have to make decisions, and they have to be very clear on the direction that they're going in. I think then some leaders make the mistake of over-collaborating and then find that the company never moves forward. I think you can collaborate, you can gain input, which is helpful in making decisions, but you must be decisive. Even if you get it wrong, that's okay, but having clarity and ensuring that your team knows what the destination is absolutely critical.
Now, Text 100 Global Communication, that's what it's called now. We spoke to Barbie Segal from Zeno Group just last month, and we learned a great deal about integrated communications. And it's no longer just PR in silo, you know, writing press releases. So how does the future of communication look like to you?
Well, I think communications has at its heart the notion of storytelling. And so I believe that the future of communications is just as Barbie described. It's this notion that we are now working across multiple stakeholders, across multiple platforms, and notion of taking complex issues and making them accessible to the masses. So for me, the future of communications will be taking the very core principles of what makes communications great, but ensuring that you can deliver a consistent message across all the different multiple platforms so that as a customer of a brand, you have real clarity in what that brand stands for. So it's really taking a brand and making it accessible to the masses.
Today, marketing strategy isn't linear anymore, and there are more uncertainties with all the different channels. So how do you then convince your clients or, you know, prospective clients to take a brave approach beyond the traditional methods without a proper metrics or tools?
It comes down to linking what we do with what's important to the client. So if I'm talking to a CEO, I know that they're less interested in really the kind of metrics that communicators are interested in. What they're interested in is business outcomes. So when I'm talking to a CEO, when I talk about the kind of work we can do, I link it to the things such as the financial performance of the business, increase in sales, all of the KPIs, if you like, that a CEO cares about. So if I can link what we are doing to the things that that are topmost in his mind, that's powerful, right? If I'm talking to a communicator, typically it's very similar because they were reporting into a CEO and they know that the performance of their business is critically important and the outcome is critically important. So to me, it always comes back to, can I demonstrate that my communication strategy will have an impact on the business? Is it a strategic driver of business change? And if I can make that link, then that's powerful in order for the company to say, this is an area I should invest in because it will create valuable return.
And in a testimonial given to you for the 2014 Top Women in PR, Mark Renfrey, he said you played a pivotal role in changing the way PR agencies pitched new business with success of a client win with BlackBerry. Do you remember that pitch to BlackBerry? Because he said that when others would have taken an easy route and turned the other way, you rose to the challenge and pitched for BlackBerry.
Right. Well, I think there was two aspects to that. First of all, a very important part of how we pitch is not really to win at all costs. For us, it's very important to be authentic. So if a client asks us to a pitch, we are typically very honest about, you know, what are the challenges that company is facing? And so we challenge them in terms of the kind of recommendations we make to really challenge their thinking. In other words, we don't want to come in and tell a client everything is great if it's not. We go in and we're very transparent about these are the insights we have in terms of the future of your market, the future of what your competitors are doing, and what you need to do to be successful. So, you know, our focus is, can we challenge them to think differently? I think the other piece that's being referred to about the BlackBerry pitch was that we partnered with another communications agency. So that is not part of our group. And that's untypical in the industry. And that was APCO. I happened to have a strong relationship with the CEO of APCO. And we felt that actually we would be stronger by pitching together than pitching against each other. And so that was actually one of the first times that had happened in our industry. I'm surprised because I think actually collaboration across agencies is something that we should all strive for, because I think we can be stronger together than necessarily competing all of the time. So I expect that we will collaborate with other agencies for major pieces of business again in the future.
Amar will share more on the campaign that revolves around innovation and what should business owner look out for when it comes to their own communication strategy. So stay with us on Enterprise with the CEO of Text 100, Amar Hines, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're still tuned to Enterprise, and we have Amar Hines, CEO of Tex 100, with us today. We've covered quite a bit with you, from jumping the ranks at Tex 100 to the future of communications. Now, going back to Xerox PARC, do you have other examples that deal with innovation?
Well, I think in most of the brands that I work for, I think innovation has got to be at the heart of how you look at a particular brand challenge. If I take IBM, for example, one of the things that was an interesting change in their business environment was that when they sold the PC division to Lenovo, it was clear to them from a business perspective that the consumer would no longer ever buy an IBM product. It was always going to be large corporations. And so at that point, they thought about, if the consumer has no relationship with our brand, does the consumer care? And the answer was, of course, the consumer should care about IBM technology, because IBM technology is not perhaps never something they will buy, but it's actually something that drives a lot of the things they care about. If you think about healthcare, if you think about weather, if you think about the environment, IBM technology is making a difference in many things that the consumer cares about. So that was the innovation thinking that went behind developing a campaign around a smarter planet. So for the consumer, the message was clear. IBM is building a smarter planet by its technologies that perhaps you will never buy, but you care about.
Walk us through, in today's global communication agency, right, how one plans and executes a campaign.
Well, it's getting broader and broader than it ever has before. That, even 10 or 15 years ago, that would be a much simpler question to answer. Today, the principles still remain. We start by understanding at a strategic level what the company wants to do, right? What, do they want to enter a new market? Do they want to differentiate from a highly competitive market? Do they want to launch new products? What are the things that we start with that. And then we begin to develop an overarching strategy, which is all about the brand profile of that organization. And then how do we ensure that our communications gives a consistent brand interaction regardless of what platform it's on and regardless of what audience it's communicating to? And the reason for that is that if any of those things are out of line with each other, then in a hyper-transparent world, the consumer or any of the stakeholders will see that quickly. So for us, you have to really start at the top, which is, who are you, what do you stand for, and why would anybody care? Mm-hmm. And once you've answered those kind of questions, then it moves from strategy into execution. So if we have a social and digital execution, are we being consistent about the brand there? If it's a media execution, are we being consistent there? What we're finding is that probably the most important thing is to have clarity around what the brand stands for, and then ensure that all of your communications and delivery of that to your stakeholders is consistent across the board.
Now you're overseeing 24 offices. How is the current state of the communication space here in Malaysia in comparison to other countries where, Tex 100 has presence in?
Well, I'm happy to say that this past year we have seen growth in every single one of our markets. I think that just 2 years ago, we saw the European market stall and was quite flat in terms of growth for a number of years. I think the developing markets, particularly in Asia, have been on the increase for many years. So we didn't see any decline in that market. I think communications is becoming increasingly important as so many companies go global. So in terms of the overall state of communications and investment in communications, it's becoming more and more important to brands. And I think social and digital and the disruption of technology has, to a large extent, really accelerated the importance of really a consistent brand profile. So I'm very, very positive and optimistic about communications in the future. I think we're in a terrific position to continue to grow, not just Tex 100 and not just communications industry, but the industry at large, which is goes back to my point about collaboration. I don't think we need to compete in order to grow. I think the market is growing in its own right.
Now, what are some of the practical advice you would give to business owners when it comes to strategizing their own campaign, communications campaign?
Well, I think the most important thing is really to be clear on what your business proposition is. How does it differentiate from your competition? And how will your consumer or your buyer or whoever is going to, you know, avail of your service, how will that benefit them? And so you have to take an outside-in perspective rather than an inside-out, because I think a lot of companies start out saying, this is who we are and I want to go out and tell the world. But actually you should step back a minute and say, well, what does the world want? And if what I have is not that, how do I marry what the world wants and what I want to give it? Mm-hmm. So it's really that perspective of what your potential market is and ensure that you're balancing that with what you believe your product can do. Because, you know, I've seen many companies set up, entrepreneurial companies set up, thinking, I've got the latest and greatest, best thing ever. Nobody wants to buy it. So, you know.
You see a lot of that in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, you do, which is terrific because, I mean, I think that's the notion of innovation that can fail or be successful. Sometimes it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell what will take off. But I don't think that, you know, at the very outset, even when you're thinking about communications, always think about what your audience wants to hear, not just what you want to tell them.
And finally, do you have that one campaign that you were involved in the 20 years of your career in the PR space that you'll never forget?
I think Smarter Planet was probably pivotal in my career, just simply because it was such a overarching strategy that almost created a movement. I found that campaign was something that so many other companies wanted to emulate, which was this notion of having impact in the world without even talking about what your product is, which was fascinating, that notion that it's IBM's purpose was about a greater good for the world, not just about selling technology. So that's probably the holy grail for so many companies, is how can I elevate my communication strategy into a level of importance that will have impact on the world. And I think that's all about purpose, and so many companies are really looking to what is our purpose and why should people care about my brand.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Amar Hines, CEO of Tex100. And if you missed out parts of this interview on Enterprise, you can always download a podcast on our website at bfm.my and look for Enterprise. Thank you for listening. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.